Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hello and welcome to the Cartoon Saluniverse, the podcast that burrows deep into the world of Cartoon Saloon. I'm Michael Leader.
I'm Steph Watts.
And I'm Jake Cunningham, and I'm huffing and puffing and blowing this pod down.
So join us on our quest into the glorious world of Cartoon Saloon. Oh, Jake, Steph, the three of us on a podcast together. What a rare treat, even if Jake does make a bad joke that makes it sound like we're going to be doing an episode on the three pigs.
I think it's fine. I think if you stretch the metaphor out to include Cartoon Saloon and their love of inhabiting the figure of a wolf and the fact there are three of us, you can, with enough time, with enough words in the essay, you could build out that metaphor nicely.
And also, we would be gladly blown over by Cartoon Saloon.
Yes.
In that version of the fairy tale.
Mm. But what are the bricks? What is the hay? We'll never know. Hey, how are you doing?
Yeah, Steph, it's been a while since we've been on a podcast together. How are you getting on?
It's been
on
a long time. I feel like I've already been treated with some bad metaphors. Let's go. I'm ready.
You're back in it. This is
I'm
all
ready
it takes.
For this puffin party that we're all going to be in for the next however long.
And it is a puffin party. I'm glad you phrased it like that. That's exactly what it is.
Because we've all gathered here today to talk about Puffin Rock.
And the new friends.
Do not forget those new friends. The feature-length spin-off of the Puffin Rock TV series, which is Cartoon Saloon's preschool series that's been running for a couple of seasons, massive in China, as well as being on Netflix and other places. We did mention Puffin Rock in the final episode of the Cartoon Saluniverse miniseries, because we covered shorts and TV series and everything. And as we like to do, whenever one of the subjects of our miniseries releases a new film or something, we like to do a new episode. We've already done two Cartoon Saloon-related episodes in the last year. We recently spoke to Paul Young, producer, CEO, and now director of Screecher's Reach, the Star Wars Visions short. And then before Christmas, towards the end of last year, we spoke to Nora Toomey, who directed The Breadwinner, but also directed My Father's Dragon. And I suppose before we get too deep into Puffin Rock, we do have a bit of unfinished business there, because I don't think there's any recording of us on mic, Jake, talking about My Father's Dragon. What do we think about that? Where does it fit into the Cartoon Saloon story? What do you think?
Yeah, it's interesting thinking about it, because Nora Toomey is the person with both of her films that has veered away from what we imagine as the track of Cartoon Saloon. And The Breadwinner is very different. You're getting out of Ireland. You're telling a very different story with a slight variation in style to what we're used to. And My Father's Dragon feels like pushing that envelope even further, that stylistically it might be, I would say, less exciting than what we might be used to. Like, I think there is a different texture to it. There's a different level of expression to it. I think there are aspects of it in some of the creature design or the kind of dystopian urban center that's at the start of the film. but the core of it is quite picture book in quality. It's quite soft, it's quite round, and I think that shows signs of ambition from the studio. It's looking for an audience, a Netflix audience, that can reach out and connect to this film globally.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's looking for a younger audience, a different audience than we've seen them go for as well. I do think the storytelling is a bit simpler. There are not as many hard edges to it. Like when we look at films like Song of the Sea or Wolfwalkers, they don't take like easy narrative routes. And that is not to diminish My Father's Dragon. I think it makes for a very satisfying emotional story. But I think it's kind of hitting a lot of narrative beats that we might expect it to. And it's offering that familiarity that younger audiences might crave within a package that's really satisfying.
Yeah, I think it's really fascinating seeing Cartoon Saloon after those very tight budgeted early features, courting these global international partners, working with various streamers. They've worked with Apple, they've worked with Disney Plus, and that was their project with Netflix, and in the process pulled them across the Atlantic into much more of an American sounding, at least, world, because the majority of the voice cast were familiar voices from Hollywood, you know, Jacob Tremblay, etc. It is definitely a picture book film for the younger kids. It's not too safe, because it still has the opening 15 minutes or so are really emotionally, you know, quite fraught. This family where they're driven out of their almost idyllic home and taken into the city, and the mum struggling for money to pay rent, and the sort of lies, or the white lies, she tells the son character, but then the son is at that age where he really wants to help and put all of the responsibility on his shoulders. There's still a lot in there, and the design of both the opening rain-slicked dystopian big city that they're in, and then the design of the monster island they go to is really, really something. But I agree, it's what is also fascinating about this phase of Cartoon Saloon, where Wolfwalkers was pitching a little bit older, almost into tweenage or teenage, ideal audience, because it's a bit sort of sharp around the edges, a bit scarier. Then My Father's Dragon pitches a little younger. Then Screecher's Reach, the Star Wars Vision short, is the scariest thing they've done to date. It's an outright horror short film, not for little kiddies. And then Puffin Rock comes along, and this is really
the scariest one yet.
I mean, absolutely terrifying if you're scared of puffins. Not like I am, but
it's funny you lay them out like that, Michael, because the similarities are still there. As well, tonally they might be very different, but looking through the entire filmography, this is a studio that's obsessed with moving home.
Yep. The power of story and identity, all of these things, making connections across those barriers. There is still that very strong through line, even if this is pitched to a very specific demographic of maybe 3 to 6 year olds, that sort of preschool demographic. Because when you get out of mainstream Hollywood cinema, where family movies is just meant to be satisfy anyone from 0 to 80, and there's not really any smaller demographic than that. When you go on to CBeebies or children's programming, when it's done well, there are these real sort of micro demographics. And this is one that, I think that even Ivo, who's nearly 5, my son, is probably getting a little bit too old for this. He's already wanting something that is scarier. As I said on a previous library cafe, he's watching Indiana Jones. He's reading Tintin. He's already way ahead, even though he doesn't understand anything that's going on in any of them. he's fighting for that. But I think that even before we watch the film, this is something quite rare and interesting and exciting in that regard, because it's really for kids, little kids in it as well. So before we dive in too deeply, let's have a bit of a read, a bit of a context session, not as fully fledged as we have on previous episodes, celebrating Ireland's magnificent natural environment with themes of belonging, courage and friendship. Puffin Rock and the New Friends follows family favourites from the animated series Una, Baba, May and Mossy, who are joined by a new cast of characters as Isabel, Phoenix and Marvin arrive on the island. When the last little egg of the season disappears under mysterious circumstances, Una and her friends race against time to bring the little egg home before a big storm hits and puts the entire island in danger. So, quick shout out to people behind the scenes before we get too deep. This, of course, is, you know, the film was produced by Paul Young, Tom Moore, Nora Toomey, directed by Jeremy Purcell, who, if you go on his IMDb, has had lots of adjunct roles across the Cartoon Saloon history, all the way back to Secret of Kells. It's written by Sarah Daddy, who wrote parts of the series. And again, if you go on her IMDb, she's worked on all sorts of great kids programming, including Molly and Mac, which is deserving of a Library Cafe episode all on its own, because that is the musical soap opera set in Scotland.
You've told me about this. Oh, yeah, this sounds really good.
It makes Scotland look like the most beautiful place on earth, which it is. So she's writing the script, and it's this really fascinating collaboration between Cartoon Saloon and this Northern Irish studio, Dog Ears. So embracing all of Ireland, the whole of the island of Ireland, in this feature. So where should we start with this, really? So I've definitely watched some of the series. Had either of you watched some of the series before this, or was this going in completely clean?
I watched some episodes in the lead up to our recap at the end of the Cartoon Saloon series. I have to say I did not watch all of Puffin Rock in preparation for this episode, but I was familiar with Puffin Rock.
Yeah, I think I watched one episode for our roundup episode. Kind of knew what I was getting in for. I think forgot how young it is kind of skewed for. So all the way through watching, I was kind of making notes like, not keen on this, but it's not for me. So it doesn't matter. Yeah, kind of felt like a film where I should have really like borrowed someone's child to watch with and just get the full experience of seeing how like small children react to it.
Mm-hmm. Steph, you should have watched it with me, because I was the person making notes and going, this is exactly for me.
Although, yeah, I will say kind of halfway through, I did kind of lean forwards in my chair and like, yeah, what's going to happen to the little egg?
It's quite gripping.
I need to know. Yeah.
Like the it's all about the egg. Once the egg is in jeopardy, then you're hooked.
It can go either way, really. You know, children's television can just be like a massage for the brain, and you can sort of feel your understanding of the world and your intelligence sort of winding backwards to being that of a 4 or 5 year old.
That's in the night garden.
It's a more innocent time. But I think this film, the opening scenes of the film are very much like the series, where it's Una and Baba. And they're going out and they're just going to jump over a stream. And maybe the plot of the whole episode is, we need to get that hermit crab a new shell. And how's that going to work? And then we'll learn a little bit about hermit crab. And that's it. It's lovely. And it's wonderful. And it is this wonderful idealized storybook version of Ireland, of the natural world.
One in which
world.
There are no people.
Well, exactly. Anthropomorphized. But the film... And this is the thing. In the programming for cinemas for kids, you often get these 45-minute long Peppa Pig special or Paw Patrol special. And that's just sort of like a maximized version of an episode or a package of multiple episodes of the series. And this was what I felt about this. I was like, is this going to feel like a long episode? Is this going to feel like a film? It feels like a film. Because as you say, once that the story kicks in, and it brings with it some wisdom and some real meat to it in a way that is very sort of plainly told and isn't really varnished with metaphor too much. Because, of course, there's Puffin Rock with the animals that live there, and then you've got Chris O'Dowd as the narrator, and he very plainly says, due to climate change happening around the world, many other animals are having their habitats destroyed or changed, so they have to move somewhere else. So there is a migrant crisis bringing animals to this island, and that's the influx of the new friends.
And they don't necessarily all get along, and there is a kind of political upheaval on Puffin Rock, which is, as I understand the regular episodes, a bit of a utopia. And I was going to ask you, Michael, the kind of level of moral quandary in this. So to set up the issue is that Isabel, who is a new puffin that comes to the island, in trying to protect the last egg, is actually accused of stealing the last egg, and then pins this on Marvin, another new immigrant otter, and essentially starts a witch hunt to cover up her lie. I wasn't prepared for that that level of kind of emotional intensity and morality. And I think from what I remember of the episodes I did watch, it never quite gets as deep as that.
Well, no. And that's something that did surprise me about this, that it is more than it seems on the face of it, because there's a tendency within children's fiction for this age group, the sort of storybook age group, picture book age group, to really front load this, the meaning and the moral. And you go into a library and you go into the kids section, and it would be the big city, or when we moved. There's actually a book called When War Came. And they are facing front what they're about, the message. And there was a really good column on Lit Hub about books that are clearly written by adults with a sort of adult view of the world, with no sort of use of magical realism or fantasy or fairy tale to actually heighten or twist real teachable moments into something that's interesting. And that's what this does really well, I think, is, even though, as you say, that's the inciting incident that brings all of these different animals to the island, and we can then as adults keep reading it with all of these inner meanings about this sort of infighting or this sort of anxiety between all these different communities. There's one bit where it's revealed that Phoenix, the character, isn't a puffin, that they are a
golden phoenix? No, a golden pheasant. Sorry.
Golden pheasant, and golden pheasants don't eat fish.
No, they eat grubs and worms.
And that's just like a really cool thing about culture clashing, cultural differences, and difference in taste and diet and everything. But then, yes, adding this extra twist on top, which is the actual story about the protection of the egg, and becomes a personal story again. It's not about abstracting. It's about kids are probably going to go through something like this.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, to get 30, to get 20, 20, 20, to get 20, 20, to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
they're caught in a lie, or they act up with a responsibility that they want to do but maybe haven't fully earned yet, or and they might do something wrong, and then that's how they're tempted to lie, tempted to maybe blame somebody else. And it becomes about self-awareness and emotional intelligence in that regard, which I think is really, really deftly handled in this, really well, because it also treats it with a very interesting amount of stakes to bring that whole storytelling craft back into the cartoons for the universe conversation.
And alongside this, you do have the oncoming storm, the climate change coming towards the island. And this is what previously destroyed Isabel's home. And it's like she is carrying that weight of destruction with her, and it's almost bringing it to the island. It's quite a lot, but obviously no 5-year-old's going to be reading it like that. But you do see these things like a burrow of rabbits and a storm gradually filling up a burrow to the point of flooding. Right? If this was Watership Down, that would be a very different graphic to wrestle with.
Yeah, I think the kind of quintessential cartoon saloon look in this film definitely softens some of the more kind of scary and like potentially upsetting kind of ramifications of the storm and of the egg being eyed up by enormous seagulls. Like there is a lot of danger there, but I think the fact that everything is so kind of round, soft, very like almost like gravelly textured, like there's no just kind of smooth, flat look to anything. Even if all the characters are 2D, you've got this lovely texture going on in everything. Mm. Like every little leaf, every dandelion seed has this like lovely kind of edge to it that really makes it feel like so beautiful. And I think there are definitely points where, yeah, if you know you are watching a rabbit burrow being flooded, you can be like, oh, but it looks very nice, like it's very kind of soothing in that way. Like you can definitely like take on what it's saying, but you're not kind of really distressed at any point because it looks like so gorgeous.
Yeah, I don't think you ever truly think there is any more than mild peril at hand here, but you're right about they kind of the reverence they have for the landscape is so clear here. And it might be in simpler, rounder shapes, and it's not filling every corner of the screen, but it looks beautiful. Like it's almost cosmic the way that they look at rocks and grass and water, like just constantly glistening, shining, and you feel like you could just lose yourself in a pebble. And on the roundness, I think this is the most round we've seen them. Like Baba is, of course, totally round, and then we get the introduction. We get the introduction of an even cuter puffin than Baba, who is somehow even more round. I think this is what makes it so appealing. And I think if we looked back on My Father's Dragon, we would see a lot of roundness on the island. And of course, with Wolfwalkers, there was a big deal made out of the fact that the city is all harsh angles and the forest is all round. So I just wanted to read out something. Ooh. Because at the time of recording, Twitter has just changed its logo. It's no longer called Twitter and X, and who cares? Whatever. But there's a good thread from the studio that designed the previous Twitter logo, which was the bird, the blue bird with the beak and the feathers. Everyone knows what a bird looks like. They have beaks and feathers. So Studio Makoko. And this line, the approach was that it would be built from a series of circles. The mark is the visual embodiment of neutrality, the product of layers of intersection and connectivity, as opposed to the work of an individual. And I'd read that just as like on the morning of watching Puffin Rock. I thought that is very true about this setting of Puffin Rock. It is so round. It is so inclusive. It is so connected. And that's there in kind of every aspect of the design of it.
Mm. And I really do see, if you see the flowchart of Cartoon Saloon's projects, there is probably the junction point, the fork in the road out of Song of the Sea that leads to this. Because even when you have those beautiful wide landscape shots, of the actual island, it has that strange perspective that those Ross Stewart type backgrounds love to have, where it's flat, but it doesn't make sense. It doesn't make any sense. But it's this flatness that shows a landscape rolling in front of you. And then, as you say, Wolfwalkers is almost the aging up of Song of the Sea into something sharper and darker and scarier. But this is the idyll that's explored in elements of Song of the Sea.
Well, and we do have this amazing bit in the middle, the flashback, which is directed by Lorraine Lorden, who does this watercolour flashback for the destruction of Isabel's home island. And that's more like a Princess Kaguya type thing, where the brushstrokes seem to be appearing as the sequence evolves. It's really beautiful and completely different in style.
Mm-hmm. Is that quietly the most radical thing we've seen in a cartoon saloon film?
Yeah.
Because they don't often break the style in that way. They have such a unified, beautiful style across all their films and unique to each film as well, but they don't often break the style in that way. So I guess the heads, the real animation heads, need to watch this film to see the cutting edge.
I think also that they put so much trust in that sequence that there's no voiceover or dialogue really in that whole scene. They just kind of let it play with some music underneath, and you can just watch what's happening. I feel like, good trust in that whole sequence.
Oh, so there are two points off the back of that, Steph. In terms of music, there's a lot of songs.
Dig, dig, diggy.
Please don't talk to me about the dig, dig, diggy song.
Is that where you were
it's
like...
not for me.
I need to go and watch them with dirt bikes and monster trucks now.
It just gave me a big... I've had a very low tolerance for, songs for children in films. I remember when Finding Nemo came out and everybody was singing the, Just Keep Swimming just keep song. Swimming. And I was, had no time for it.
You'd have been, seven?
Yeah, and was just like, this is not... No, don't anybody ever sing that song to me.
That was when you were reading the Box Trolls and being a weird little kid.
Yeah, so I think I just have always had a bit of a aversion to that in films for kids anyway. So just had to take a deep breath at the digging song.
I can understand that, but I can imagine also kids humming along with that. It's one of those things when you are the sort of parent or, grown up in that situation, you just have to go along with it. And I've said this before that I'd much rather watch something like this Puffin Rock movie and be a little bit cringed out by the songs than have to sit through all of Mario with Ivo.
And I did really like how Marvin's digging song kind of came back as a theme whenever he was on screen. So that playing underneath was actually really nice.
And then the other source of much sound in this movie is the narration. Chris O'Dowd with his dad jokes and his heckles. Yeah. It's a really fascinating sort of narrator because he's kind of the storyteller. It's like he's reading the storybook to you. And within the margins or within the lines, in between the lines of the story, he's adding his own jokes or his own comments, or he's heckling the characters and interacting with the characters. So really, in terms of a piece of writing, something quite original and unique here.
Trying to actually describe the level of objectivity or subjectivity or interaction that the narrator actually has with this story is quite hard to pin down, because he is seemingly surprised at a lot of their actions,
but
knows about stuff in advance.
I've gone down the rabbit hole with this, but I really do think that probably the shoes they were in while writing this, and probably him reading it, is you are reading a story to a kid, and when you do that, you do act like everything is being, you're experiencing everything for the first time in the story. You are as surprised as anybody that this is happening. You also then add your little comments, or I'd be reading something to Ivo and then something comes up and I add a little bit of trivia about, crab's eyes can swivel around 360 degrees, whatever it is, or just anything to sort of keep engaging the kid that you are, that one kid that is your audience. And I loved this. This is something so far away from the the way that maybe Disney would in the back in the day employ the big storybook opening up, and it's just a bit of narration until we fade into Snow White or Cinderella. It's something much more engaged and authentic to the experience of telling a story to somebody. And of course, storytelling, hey, it's the biggest word in the word cloud of the cartoons universe.
It is, it is. On the mention of Marvin, good new character. I liked Marvin a lot. He has joined the 2023 tradition of putting a panic attack into a kids' film. How do we rank it against Spider-Verse and Puss in Boots in the Panic Attack Olympics?
Oh, wow. I mean, ranking panic attacks. What are the individual qualities?
Yeah, I don't know. No, it's just nice to see, and very, very gently kind of dealing with something that I'm sure, it's just nice that I'm sure there are kids that have gone through that at that age that don't really understand that feeling, particularly social anxiety with a crowd, and just seeing him and not really having to be reacting to an explosion or a fight or anything. It's just the fact that there is kind of a lot of people and a lot of noise, and it's a scary new situation. And you don't really need to understand much more than that.
I think also that otters are usually like quite sociable, right? And you normally see them in pairs in groups, but he's quite, nervous and wants to be alone. So it's maybe a little bit of an undercurrent of like, it's okay if you're not fitting into the group that you've been given, stereotypically. Mm. It's okay to be a bit different and have a collection of pet rocks.
Well, because he has a great time in the cave that he finds. So Michael out of Keaton, Kilmer, Clooney, Bale, Affleck, Pattinson and Puffin Rock. Who's got the best bat cave? I've read that joke, even though we have a shared note in which everyone can see that I've set up that joke. But I will push you for an answer. What's your favourite Batcave?
Val Kilmer.
Steph?
Oh, this is really testing my knowledge of looking at recent Batcaves.
Does Pattinson even have a Batcave?
I don't think he does. He just has like an office, doesn't he?
I think he has a cave. Doesn't he? Maybe not. Maybe he's too twisted.
The last Batman I watched was The Dark Knight, where the Batcave is under renovation, so he's just in a underground.
He's in that flat where they do all the music videos.
Yeah. So I'm gonna have to say that one.
I'm gonna say Puffin Rock. It's now the best.
So why does Puffin Rock clinch it for you then, Jake? The Batcave.
Why does the Puffin Rock Batcave clinch it for me? Well, it's got bats in it. That actually become a key part of the plot, not just like by destroying gangsters in Batman Begins. Like, they help the community come together, and if that's not what a Batcave is all about, I don't know what is.
I mean, I love that slogan. I want that on the back of a t-shirt. But also, surely all the other Batcaves have bats. I've definitely seen a bat
no,
swarming
no,
but around.
Yeah, but they don't. Yeah, exactly. They don't
Doesn't
commune
like
with the
young
community
Christian Bale
and help them
get
bond.
Like lifted up by all the bats when he falls in and Batman Begins.
Yeah, they like that's just so, they're helping one guy. Whereas
he needs to help
bats.
The whole island.
Exactly. It's pretty cool, and they can carry rocks. Like, so much to love. Yeah.
You and also you did leave out Adam West. We're gonna get
of course, emails. Yeah. The West Heads, come and get me. We should mention Mossy. Mossy's good. Great character, Mossy and May. Supporting cast. Great time. Mossy is maybe the MVP because of deploying a fart bomb that saves the island. That's pretty spectacular stuff. It's maybe the cutest fart ever, maybe. Is it? It's pretty good. Pretty good.
This is another one where you're creating a ranking and a canon that is a very tough one to populate.
Listeners, come at us with your cute farts.
So this film has the best Batcave, the best panic attack, and the cutest farts.
Yeah.
Put that on your poster. It's got bats.
It's got
bats and farts.
And it's got Paul Young in a speaking role.
Yes,
it has. Isabel's dad, he goes off they're, you know, looking for the other displaced birds. It's, I was intrigued by the idea of this film, but then also thought when we were coming around to actually reviewing it, thinking we don't often venture this far down the age range, but we, you know, it's clear through this conversation, we've found elements of that artistry, of those persistent recurring themes that we've talked about throughout all their films. And there is something really wonderful and lovely about this film as well, of its own. Even it's if really you have to cringe through the super kiddie bits.
I didn't even cringe at once. Yeah.
Well, Jake, I've got a whole channel for you called CBeebies. Going to hook you up with Molly and Mac. Have you watched any Bluey, Jake?
I had Bluey on today because my
if anything, Bluey's
here.
Too grown up compared to Puffin Rock.
Bluey's got a great theme tune, though.
Well, that's another one that's just going to be stuck in your head forever.
And Bluey the movie, no doubt, is going to be huge whenever that
They're so
happens.
Good at their short-form storytelling. Sorry, Steph, leaving you out on a limb.
It's fine.
Bluey is currently number 2 highest rated TV show of all time on IMDb behind The Sopranos.
Wow.
Because it's successfully, probably in no way since, in no way other show has since The Simpsons, it's united all demographics. Like anyone who watches it will find something in it, even though it's ostensibly about a bunch of Australian anthropomorphic dogs going about their daily business. It's got a lot of everyday wisdom to it whilst also being really fun and funny and can be enjoyed by both adults and kids in 10-minute doses. To the point
can't wait
where...
for the Sopranos and Bluey crossover episode that I'm sure they'll do due to its success.
That's for the film with it, yeah.
I'm gonna have to find it, but I was looking at an amazing poll that was basically like most watched videos for under 10s. And Cocomelon is way up above everything. But the most watched feature film was Turning Red.
Interesting. Mm. Oh, and we would not have thought that would be an under 10s film. We'd think that would be 11, 12. Because it's so specifically sort of junior high, middle school kind of age.
But yeah. Bluey was up there, but not so much on The Sopranos, but you know.
But even all of the recent, Frozen 2 isn't really for that sort of age range, but Ivo loves watching that, and he loves Encanto. He has no idea what's going on in Encanto on the sort of emotional character level. It's a lot to sort of explain to him complicated family relationships, but there isn't really anything for that younger age range in terms of films. Series, he's currently into Spidey and His Friends, which is like taking all of the stakes and peril out of the MC, you know, the Marvel universe, and it's just Spider-Man and Miles Morales and Gwen having fun, and the Rhino has accidentally knocked over a tree.
Damn you!
I think there's one where like Dr. Octopus turns the entirety of Central Park into an ice rink or something, and they have to turn it back. It's just so sweet. But also you can feel your brain dribbling out of the front of your nose. We shouldn't muddy the Puffin Rock episode by recommending or criticising
other kids'
shows.
We should recommend Puffin Rock.
Puffin Rock and New Friends is definitely a film for little ones.
And big ones. So and late 20s. Not and late 20s. And 35 to 60-year-olds.
Sure. So if you want to get your gentleman suits on, go out to see it, you can. But I would probably say it is lovely with that asterisk that it is also definitely a film for kids compared to what we've looked at before. Although, as Jake says, there's something to be found in there. Do we want to... Is this anywhere other than the bottom of our Cartoons Universe list? Does it actually trouble the other films? Not that they probably wouldn't put it in the filmography on the same pegging. I don't think it's a bad thing to say if it doesn't.
I wouldn't recommend it alongside their other films, but I do think quality wise it's up there. Like, yeah, I was kind of expecting to just have my brain dribbling out of my ears for 80 minutes, but it was very engaging, very pretty. There's obviously a lot of like high quality gone into it, so yeah. It's one of the
absolutely
gang.
another bright shining star in the cartoon Saluniverse. Nice. We're happy to have it.
Another Puffin Pal.
Well, listeners, thank you for joining us this week talking about Puffin Rock and the New Friends. We should do more episodes in the main feed with the three of us. That's really fun. If you want to hear us talk about very random things that we're doing in between talking about animated movies, you can subscribe to our Patreon and get the Patreon exclusive episodes in from the Library Cafe.
We just did That's two Patreon. Parties in one episode.
Yes, After Party.
And Search and Party. And
Search Party and Puffin Party. So it's a three-party day, actually, for us.
Yeah.
Patreon.com/GhibliAttack. We also have a Discord. Where you can come and have a chat with us. We've currently got lots of speculation about Boy and the Heron, How Do You Live? Because we have people out in Japan giving us the skinny from the ground. You can also find us on the social networks. X, Twitter, we're still on there, at GhibliAttack. We're on Instagram, GhibliAttack.pod. That's also what we are on Threads, if you're that way inclined. We're also all there individually. Jake is on Twitter at Jake H. Cunningham and on Instagram, jake.h.cunningham.
And Steph is on X at _ Steph Watts. And Steph, I don't know what your Instagram handle is. I'm sorry.
You can follow my Ghibli embroidery Instagram at Tiger Moth Embroidery.
Good.
I'm there. And Michael is on Twitter at Michael J. Leader and on Instagram at Michael J. Leader.
It's Michael.Leader.
Oh, sorry. Michael.Leader. Kicked back off the podcast.
The real new friends were the new friends we made along the way.
Thank you for listening, everyone.
GhibliAttack is produced by Michael Leader, Jake Cunningham, Harold McShiel, and Steph Watts. Our music is by Anthony Ng.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Sick of being upsold at gyms?
My guy, you're currently a base member. For $90 more, I can upgrade you to our Shred membership. For $130 more, you'll be a swole member. And for just $300 more, you'll reach Sweat Platinum.
At Planet Fitness, you'll get energy without the upsell. Never pushy, always free fitness training and equipment for every workout. It's fitness that fits your budget. Join Planet Fitness for just $1 down and $10 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, May 10th. See Home Club for details.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Welcome back to Two Judgy Girls. I'm Mary from the Bay.
And I'm Courtney from LA. TJG is the podcast where we spill all the tea on your favorite reality TV shows, celebrity gossip, and everything in between. We're here to bring you our unfiltered opinions, hilarious commentary, and plenty of laughs along the way.
We're two SDSU Delta Gamma sisters with a microphone and a whole lot of opinions. Each week, we dive headfirst into the wild world of reality television, from Bravo to all the trash TV you could want. We break down the drama, dissect the latest scandals, and share our thoughts on everything from the jaw-dropping moments to the embarrassing antics.
But that's not all. We're not here to just gossip. We're here to connect with you, the jurors, and share our love of all things pop culture. Whether we're dishing on the latest celebrity breakups, discussing our favorite guilty pleasure movies, or sharing embarrassing stories from our own lives, we promise to keep it real, keep it fun, and keep you coming back for more.
Come judge with us.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.